We've just heard from Liesl Field in Selma City what it was like that day in 1994 on the grounds of the Ariel School in Zimbabwe. Chaos sort of broke out after they see these metallic objects, craft presumably, and some kind of beings that some of the students got very close to. There were messages that were received. The aftermath is pretty interesting as well. When the kids go to tell their teachers and school officials what they had seen, the reaction was not all that warm. And then when they tell their parents about it, things really hit the fan. The aftermath of the event, what it meant to their lives, and the message that they heard from these beings, at least some of the witnesses, right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Liesl and Selma, by the way, heard from our friend, our mutual friend, Jeremy Corbell. You met him in McMinnville. He says, hey, and hopes you're doing well. James Fox, can you set the scene for us in your film? You share with us the accounts of the students at the time, and then subsequently in their conversations with Dr. John Mack, that they, some of them at least, felt that they had received messages. What was that about?
Yeah, that was, just a moment when, you know, it's one thing to see something. It's another thing to allegedly make contact and receive some sort of message telepathically. I mean, that was an incredible revelation in this case. Selma, you were the one that got very close to one of these beings. And who were you with at the time?
I was standing next to Emma.
Could you just put us in that? It's such a rare opportunity to speak with someone who came that close to what could be interpreted as beings from another world. I hate to put words in your mouth, but certainly by the description, they didn't seem to be anything around here. Can you put us there?
Yeah, sure. I'll do the best I can. So we were standing next to each other. I think we were just playing whatever our usual games were, and she said, do you see that? And I said, what? And she was kind of pointing, and this kind of happened simultaneously also with Liesl and Emily and a few of the people on the playground, because we weren't the only children, obviously, on the playground, and we weren't the only kids in our age group who witnessed this. So Emma and I were standing next to each other, and as we were trying to understand or make sense of what we were seeing kind of a distance away in terms of the craft, we were walking closer toward those very same logs that Liesl was talking about earlier that were the boundaries of our playground. We knew not to cross those boundaries, and incidentally, the being didn't either, not in my experience, and I definitely don't think it did even in Emma's. She can corroborate that story for herself, but she and I were standing next to each other, and we were holding hands, and I was very tall. I was taller than most people in the school, so I was actually taller than the being itself, and the eye lock was, so I remember, I say that now as I'm thinking of it in retrospect, like, oh yeah, if I had had, the courage, I think there may have been a flash in my mind where I thought, okay, I can take whatever this thing is. I mean, of course I couldn't, but I was just trying to rationalize my experience. Having that sort of interlock gaze was when I personally lost all sense of time and sound, and the stillness and calmness came over me, but for how long, I honestly couldn't say. That particular being or beings, however many they were probably at arm's length for me at that point, because Emma and I were standing right at the logs, right at the boundary, not on them, not beyond them, but right in front of them. And this particular being it was close enough for me, again, because I was very tall and I have very long arms. My arms are probably a meter, and I could have touched it if I could have moved. I think I would have been able to, or at least that was the perception that I had, and that's how close we were. But the moment I let go of Emma's hand, again, chaos. That's when the sound came back. The playground was in chaos. I no longer saw the being. I no longer saw the craft. And I moved over to the different side of the playground to check on my brother and sister.
In James's film, he has accounts from some of the students who felt that they received a message that technology is out of control, that it's sort of like an alien editorial. You need to take care of your planet. Did either of you get any kind of a message like that, even fuzzy? Liesl, you?
Yeah, I think I was one of the kids that got a message. And it was like they were trying to warn us about damaging the planet, that we were doing harm to the planet. That's what I remember.
Was it scary, Liesl?
For me, I was scared, but I was excited as well at the same time. Obviously, it was, you know, something we had never, ever seen before. So it was a bit of a shock. But in that time, I felt safe at the same time. You know, it was just all these mixed, exciting feelings that I got.
What happens when you go toward the school to tell your teachers, tell the school administrators? What's their reaction? Were you excitedly telling them what you had seen?
We obviously had told them, but they didn't believe us in the beginning. They just didn't believe us.
Same thing, Salma. Did you try to convince anyone? Hey, I just saw this. You come out here, take a look.
I personally did not have this conversation with any of my teachers. We sent a few other kids to go up, and I think we sent maybe one or two, and they came back, nothing happened, and then we sent more kids, and I think that was when at least one or two teachers came out to see what was happening, and that's when they saw that the playground was just an absolute chaos. Where their staff meeting was occurring was in an older part of the school, so it was a little bit higher up, so they actually had like a higher view, you know, not quite an aerial view, for lack of a better word, but they were higher up than we were, so they kind of had a little bit more of a broader scene of the entire playground, and I think that's when they decided, like, okay, something's going on, we better cut this staff meeting short and see what's going on with the kids.
Were you told to keep quiet? Did they say stop telling this story, Liesl?
No, we kept on. I mean, obviously, you know, we had obviously seen what we had seen, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, if I remember correctly, Misty Vernon, I think she was one of the teachers that actually believed us.
Yeah, she was. She was our grade 6 teacher. Liesl and I were in the same class, and she was always a big advocate for us, and we had to go back to class. Liesl, do you remember? Just like after that, it was like, okay, everybody go to class. What? Okay. How do you even concentrate? Yeah. she was definitely a big advocate of ours, and she allowed us. To be honest, I don't actually remember what happened when we went back to class. I know we went back to class, but I don't think any schoolwork was done. I think she allowed us to have a conversation about what had happened, maybe at least for a little bit before getting back to school, getting back to schoolwork. But I honestly can't say for sure. But she was very helpful, at least in that she didn't tell us, one, to stop talking about it, or I don't think any teachers did, actually. Not to my knowledge. She did not. But she did tell us that she believed us, and we just, you know, she told us, she made us feel like she supported us, and if we needed to, you know, she was a resource and support system that we could go to.
It's amazing that it happens when all the teachers are in one part of the school and all the kids are out where you can see it. It's almost like it was planned that way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to be fair, there were at least two teachers on the younger side of the playground where my brother and sister were, mainly because they were younger kids. So there was no way they could go unsupervised for that amount of time. For us, we were the older kids, so it didn't really matter. But I don't know, and again, that was a different side of the playground. I don't know what occurred on that side. My brother and sister seemed none the wiser. They were playing on the seesaw, or I know my sister was eating chocolate and was very irritated that I went to bother her in my state of panic. And, you know, she was none the wiser. But I do know that there had to have been at least one or two adults on that side of the playground.
James, in your film, I think at least in one of the accounts I've read about the Ariel School incident, that there is an adult who acknowledges being out there and seeing at least some of it. Did you explore that?
So when I went to Africa and met with additional witnesses at the landing site, the now headmistress, who at the time was a school teacher, Judy Bates, was very welcoming and opened up the playground and the school to the film crew, and she knew that we were going to be out there meeting with some of the witnesses, her former students, but didn't want to participate necessarily in herself, which was fine. I mean, I was very grateful of how gracious she was. But in the middle of filming out in the field, she suddenly came out of her office and walked out and greeted her former students. We had a lovely chat and unexpectedly decided to go on camera, and she did. And she wanted to apologize. I put together a little clip because she wasn't able, unfortunately, to join us on the show tonight. But I put together a little clip of that brief meeting with her, which I was hoping that your producers at some point could play, because if you listen very carefully, she apologizes to the students having not paid more attention and listened to them, but also sort of justifies that response by dealing with her own personal experiences with
Mike. I'll ask Michael Cosio. Michael, do we have that clip ready to go? If we don't, well, let's go ahead and listen to it. This is Judy Bates.
Okay.
We went back one last time to the Ariel School to meet with Judy Bates, a teacher at the time of the incident and now the headmistress. Something was weighing on her that she wanted to tell the children.
Yeah, I said I wanted to apologize. I should have taken more notice. But I didn't. I was more concerned about me and not them. And what was going on in my own sort of experience.
And if you could summarize in just one sentence what took place September 1994 here at Ariel School, Rua, Zimbabwe, what would you say?
Aliens visited us. And that's about it, yeah. And that's where, if you believe it, you believe it. If you don't, well.
That's a clip from The Phenomenon. James, what is the implication there? She was thinking more about herself, meaning something affected her in a profound sort of way, and she was on her own trip?
I don't want to put words in her mouth, but there were other aspects of her experience that she was willing to discuss off camera, but basically confirming that, you know, it happened the way the kids had described it happening, and that she was a witness as well.
From what I have read and what is in the film, the students go home, they tell their parents, and then things really hit the fan. Selma, you, and then Liesl, what did you tell your parents, and how did they react?
I did not tell my parents initially. I told my parents after a clip of me had aired in England on the BBC.
Oh.
One of my mom's sisters, who was living in South London at the time, called her up and said, I'm sorry, what is going on? So then I had to tell my mom. I just, you know, she asked me what had happened, when it happened, what the teachers did. You know, obviously as a parent, she was like, okay, making sure my kid is safe. And when I told her what had happened, she just said to me, okay, well, I believe you, was the first thing that she said. And she said, it's going to be okay. And she said, I'm proud of you for checking on your brother and sister, because I'm the eldest. That's my role, even if I was, you know, no matter what experience I was having. And so then she said to me, it'll be okay. And it honestly was. My family have been some of my biggest, not some of, like literally my biggest support, especially, and it started with my parents and obviously went, you know, trickled down to my siblings, who the two who were on the playground were very young at the time. But as we got older and as these, you know, as technology got more advanced and YouTube came about, all these clips started to appear. And then conversations ensued about, hey, can you talk a little bit more about this? So there was a lot of support on my end, especially with my family, and it started with my mom.
Liesl, how about for you?
I've gone home, and I remember telling mom and dad, and my mom definitely believed what I was telling her. And until today, she still believes what I saw. So on my side, yes, my family have been very, very supportive, and it hasn't changed. I mean, my kids now are always asking me, especially my seven-year-old. She's always asking me. She's always asking me to go on YouTube so she can see mommy telling her story. you know, so it's always been, and I've always been supported.
I'd love to ask both of you if you could respond to some of the skeptics out there that say clearly there's a prosaic, you know, conventional explanation to what took place. Selma and then Liesl, could you respond to that? How would you address that?
How would I address skeptics? I mean,
yeah.
I feel that. I don't want to say it's a lost cause, but I would rather continue to have conversations like this about people who are open to having the conversation. I think it's one thing if you're skeptical, but you're willing to engage in a discourse. It's another thing if you're just not willing to have a conversation about other people's experiences when there's, one, their own validation that they experienced it, and also science to back it up. And I think that until we are ready to have those kinds of conversations, I'm not particularly interested in changing anybody's mind, as long as, you know, you're welcome, much like what Ms. Bates said, which if I can just take a moment to say thank you, James, for playing that. Thank you for sharing that, because for me personally, that even 25 years later, or however many years later it's been, it's a comfort to hear that, especially from her, because she's a pioneer of that school. You know, she used to live on the premises, and I think she still does, I don't know, but she was also one of my favorite teachers and one of the most instrumental teachers that have led me to become the person who I am, simply because of her leadership. So it was a comfort to hear that. It still is for me. So thank you for playing that. I didn't want to forget that. I want to make sure I acknowledge Ms. Bates.
Oh, thank you for saying that. I thank her for coming forward.
Yeah,
definitely. A big thank you to Judy. I mean,
Liesl, for you, have you been hit with skepticism? I've read articles where people try to say it was just mass hysteria among school kids.
Oh, definitely. I've had quite a couple of emails and people sending me messages via Facebook, and I've told them as it is. You either believe us or you don't. I really don't care, because what we saw is what we saw. And if you think about it, we were what, just over 60 kids on the playground. Kids don't tend to lie, you know. And there was a lot of us on the playground that day. Our stories were all the same.
We'll come back to it, find some of the consistencies in the stories. Liesl Field, Selma Siddick, James Fox, at least one of our guests tonight briefly considered leaving, going away with the visitors who appeared at the Ariel School in 1994. It's an amazing story told in James Fox's film, The Phenomenon. So I wonder if Liesl or Salma, if they had a chance to have a similar encounter and were asked to go along, if they would consider it now. We're going to get to that question, see how this experience affected their lives, and maybe take a call or two from our listeners right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Liesl and Salma, I'd like to explore sort of the personal side of this, if you allow me. How did this affect your lives? I'm wondering, did you become UFO buffs? Did you start studying books and reading everything you could about it? Is it, do you see it as a positive development in your lives? Or is it the kind of thing where, as you got older, you're in a bar or a restaurant, you don't want your friends to mention that you had this experience, you don't want to tell the story all over again? Liesl, let's start with you.
I always talk about my my experience. I mean, I've got loads of friends that constantly ask me, you know, about what we saw. So for me, it's quite often that I talk about my experience. And I think with what we saw many years ago, with the, well, it's not exactly, but... You know, when the message that I felt that I got, that we were harming the planet and we needed to change things, it's a bit different. But then I've seen that I've gone into caring for people, and I've, you know, and I've always done that. That's my passion. But I feel that I'm giving back something into the community as well.
Salma, same sort of question, the long-term effects on your life, how it sort of has shaped you, if at all, and whether you're comfortable in speaking about it pretty much any time.
I definitely don't talk about it as often as maybe Liesl does. I think lately I have been trying to be better about it simply because it's bigger than me, and there are many people out there who have their own experiences who maybe are also hesitant to come forward. And so if I can be brave enough to share mine, perhaps that will encourage someone else to share theirs, or if they don't want to share theirs, to at least think about their experience in a different light and to confirm or validate in some way that, you know, they're not crazy and that their experience is relevant. I do work in service. I'm very particular about the work that I've done. I was very particular about what I studied in school. I personally don't recall getting a message. I think I probably did, if I'm being honest. Emma did, and she was standing next to me, and we were holding hands, and she got a message. But I think there was something about me disconnecting physically with her when I let go of her hand that shifted a whole bunch of things. So perhaps it's something that will come to me one day, but not many people knew about my experience out in my friend circle. Of course, some family members in Zim and friends in Zim. It was just something that kind of died down after time, but it has resurfaced lately with more of, you know, through having more conversations like these and with James's film coming out and more YouTube videos coming out. I think that people are listening in a way that they haven't been before, and I think it's created just a different. It made me feel a little, you know, proud of myself for having spoken up even as an 11-year-old, but also still being able to speak up now. Even though I don't do it as much, I'm getting better about it, and I'm feeling more comfortable in doing it.
Did either of you become UFO fanatics, where you read everything you could or watch every movie or documentary? Or Liesl,
absolutely,
what about you?
Not for me, no. And I haven't. James asked me all that. He's like, have you seen the movie yet? And I'm like, nope. No, I actually am the polar opposite. I had not seen an image of what I guess is called a gray until maybe last year. I am not a buff at all. My brother is. He's very, very much into this. He knows about you, George. He was like, oh my God, you're going to be talking to George. I was like, I met George. He's so jealous. I would say I personally am not. Not because I think the reason for me was that I didn't know where to start looking. And two, I didn't feel that I needed any of that to validate or explain my experience, because I much prefer to figure out what that is on my own. And I think that that's what I do every day.
Liesl, we heard that you at least briefly considered maybe going with them, or you thought about it. Would you do that now?
Definitely. I think I would. I would. I'd like to find out what they came for, what they wanted from us, what message they wanted us to give. If I had a second opportunity, I wouldn't think twice. I'd definitely go for it.
Have either of you had other experiences, anything even remotely close to this, I guess is out of the question, but lights in the sky, the sense that something is around or visiting? Liesl, that you, then Salma?
I've seen lights actually not long time ago, but that's about it. I do remember, though, not long after the incident at Ariel School, I had a dream, and I felt like I was being lifted up or hovered against my bed. And I found myself on the floor, waking up. I can't say what it was. It could have been a nightmare. It could have been a dream. You know, I just don't know. But I did feel myself lifting off on my bed and hovering and finding myself in the
Salma?
Floor.
Sorry. Salma, same question. Anything else? Any other incidents? Sorry. Any kind of encounters?
No, so sorry, you cut off there for a second. No other encounters to that extent. Actually, earlier this year, I don't remember exactly what month, but I saw something in the sky. It was nothing like I had seen at Ariel, but I did see something in the sky that made me go, oh, hi guys, you're back again, kind of thing. But that was it. Nothing on the level of which we had experienced in 94. I haven't had any dreams either since. So maybe it was just like a one-time thing for me.
James, seeing Dr. John Mack in your film, interacting with the kids and the witnesses and the manner that he had, it just brought it all back. I was privileged to meet him a couple of times and interview him, and it's such a terrible loss to not have him around. It'd be great to have his input for your film, wouldn't it?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I met him in 1997 in Roswell. And, God, if I knew then what I know now, you know, I could have really sat down with him. But what a treasure that, you know, we have those interviews, that he made the effort, that he went to Africa with a film crew and documented that moment in time. I mean, it's one of the most valuable, accounts, one of the most compelling accounts. I don't care, you know, of any story, really. I mean, look, if you ask the average Joe, hey, suspend judgment for a moment and just let's just speak hypothetically that this event actually occurred the way the witnesses are describing it having occurred, how significant of a story would this be? And everyone says, my God, it would be the biggest story in history. There's nothing more significant than that. And that's the astonishing aspect of this case within the film, is that there's not been one person that's walked away thinking it didn't happen the way it's described having happened. It's one of the most amazing stories, I feel, ever.
Let's take a call or two. East of the Rockies, Ken in New York has a question. Hi, Ken. You're on with Liesl and Salma and James.
How are you, George? How are you, James? Salma, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Well, Salma, I am so nervous talking to you. I can't believe I'm actually getting a chance to speak with you. I mean, I really can't. I first, before I ask my question, which is, the alien you saw, did it look like a Skinny Bob video? I don't know if you're familiar with it. I really just want to thank you first for doing what you're doing, coming out. We get a chance to live through what you experienced, Selma. That's why people want to hear your story. You got to see a creature from another world. No one ever, I mean, this is the most astounding thing in the world. And everyone wants to hear your story because we couldn't be there, so we're trying to live it through what you see. So I'd like to know, if did the alien look like the Skinny Bob video? Are you familiar with the Skinny Bob video at all?
No, I'm not. And thank you so much for your kind words. I really appreciate it. I don't know what the Skinny Bob video is. I'm sorry.
there's a video online that shows this what is purportedly an alien being, big head, big eyes, and it's shot on film. Looks like in an office room, presumably some captive alien that we've got. It's made the rounds, but if you haven't seen it, I guess. Maybe you could describe in more detail what their faces look like.
Absolutely. So a part of the reason why I was hesitant to ever do more UFO research, and George, I think that's a great question because a lot of people have asked, hey, did this like encourage you to do more UFO research to try to see a picture of what you saw? And for me personally, that kind of scared me because it would almost be like reliving through it again, and I needed time to make it make sense. We didn't have that chance, obviously, as children, and then your life goes on and then things happen and you move away from your home and so on and so forth. But now, I know personally for me, I'm much more able to try to conceptualize and understand what exactly my experience means for me, not necessarily as a collective, because I can't speak for everybody else. I have assumptions about that, but specifically what it means for me. And this particular being was very small in stature, had a big head, bigger than a usual human head, and it was oddly shaped, and it had big eyes that sort of slanted. I don't remember seeing any pupils or any, sort of like iris. It was all one big eyeball, if that makes sense. But it was very black and very dark. The color or skin tone was very odd, I think. The closest color I can equate it to is like an XR color, but it's not that. But it also wasn't like pale in that sense that you could see through its skin. It was just very unusual. And as Liesl described, the clothing of the being that I saw was also in black. Something very skin tight, almost like a scuba diving suit would be the closest thing, obviously, we could equate it to, but I doubt it was anything like that. I mean, of course not. It's from out of this world. So I hope that answers your question at least a little bit. I'm sorry I'm not familiar with the video you were referring to. As I said, I know very little.
Liesl, are you, I don't know if you're familiar with this video. James, you've undoubtedly seen it, but Liesl, if you have anything to add to the description of the beings that as you saw them, is it similar to anything you've seen in other shows or programs?
Yeah, I remember the beings being quite short, very white in color. Didn't see their nose, didn't see their mouth, big eyes, big black eyes. And in this tight black clothing.
And, in James's film, you describe what was to you a media frenzy. How did that happen, and how long did it last?
Go on, Selma.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry, George. I thought you were asking me that question. My apologies. I'm trying to think, Liesl. Actually, that's a good question for both of us. I don't recall. I was thinking about that today. Like, how long did the media frenzy last? I mean, this event took place in September, and our school year ends in December. So definitely that would have happened probably through the end of the year. And then the next year, we were a year older. So I don't recall if any film crew came in 1995. But the frenzy that occurred, I think, was so much of a whirlwind. I'm not even able to tell you how many people we spoke to and how long that lasted. It was just a lot.
James, you have some footage taken from Zimbabwe news broadcasts about other UFO incidents. Was there much coverage of the school incident at the time?
Well, you know, it's interesting. And Randall Nickerson, again, has got a movie coming out, and I know he delves into this because he actually interviewed the BBC correspondent, I believe his name was Tim Leach. And Tim Leach reluctantly was working with the BBC, and he was assigned this to cover this encounter. And apparently he did so reluctantly, like, oh, bully, there's so many other, you know, world events that deserve coverage, and I can't believe I have to, you know, do this UFO thing. But he got sucked in, and he became completely wrapped up in this case. And he did go around Harare, and he filmed other adult witnesses of the craft in and around the area for several days prior to the landing, to when it landed in broad daylight. So yeah, that was pretty well documented that it had been seen by adults in the area.
James, I keep hearing things and seeing it online about some big opportunity, a large platform that might become available to you soon. I think you know what I'm talking about. Are you able to say anything about that? Because I've got 50 emails telling me to ask you about it.
I cannot confirm nor deny. But no, yeah, I think September is going to be a very exciting month.
Well, that's good to know. Liesl Field, Salma Siddick, thank you so much for being here. I hope I get to see you again sometime. I can't thank you enough for sharing these very unusual and personal experiences. I'm sure the world's a better place for being able to hear it directly from you. And I hope you'll come back again sometime. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, George. It was great chatting with you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, guys.
Liesl.
Hi, a big thanks.
James, anything? Thank you both. Appreciate it. James, one last question before we got about 30 seconds. What's next for you? Is there a phenomenon part two?
So I can't go into detail at this point, but we've got some wonderful projects on the horizon for next year, and big stuff, and collaborating with other individuals in the field that I'm very, very excited about. I mean, lots of doors are opening up. There's wonderful opportunities on the horizon, and great stuff. You know, this is not just a quick flash in the pan. The rollout of this film is going to continue, the rest of this year and throughout next year. So it's all very exciting, and I think we're living in a very exciting time with the phenomenon.
That's for sure. Please keep us in the loop. James Fox, thanks for being here. Liesl Field, Salma Siddick, thank you again. And we move on. Good night to the three of you. We move on to Kitsy Duncan coming up in the next segment. I'd Rather Talk to Dead People is the name of her book.